Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is we had Sacha Baron Cohen in the news because his new show on Showtime called Who Is America included some... I could not believe that it was real. If you're not familiar with Cohen, he is a comedian. He has done several characters in the past. He's tricked people into interviews that they normally would not have agreed to. And for this show, he includes bits like where it seems that he tricked this woman who was at an art gallery into believing that he was an ex-con who found art in smearing his poop into paintings. And she seemingly not only believes him and thinks that he's amazing, but she donates her own pubic hair for a brush that he uses. But in addition to that absurdity, he takes aim at politicians, or at least people in the political realm, and it is eye-opening. But one of the standouts, one of the is this real life sort of moments, is when he got some pro-gun people to endorse giving kindergartners guns, even calling the children kinder guardians. And you had people like gun rights activist Philip Van Cleve helping make a kinder guardians video. They dress up several weapons to be kid friendly. They talk about aiming towards the center of the bad man.
Aim at the head, shoulders, not the toes.
Fire!
BFF wants to help you. Pull the string on a bad guy. Make bang bang.
They then show Matt Gaetz, who's a Republican from Florida, saying like, I need to know what this is about before I endorse it. Essentially saying, that's not typical. And then they go on to show several pro-gun Republicans endorsing this program.
I support the Kinder Guardians program. We in America would be wise to implement it too.
Maybe having young people trained and understand how to defend themselves in their school might actually make us safer here.
Our founding fathers did not put an age limit on the Second Amendment.
Toddlers are pure, uncorrupted by fake news or homosexuality. They don't worry if it's politically correct to shoot a mentally deranged gunman. They'll just do it.
And closing it with these main moments from Joe Walsh.
The intensive three-week kindergarten course introduces specially selected children from 12 to 4 years old to pistols, rifles, semi-automatics, and a rudimentary knowledge of mortars. In less than a month, a first grader can become a first grenader.
The way to stop a bad guy with a gun
is a good kid with a gun.
A good kid with a gun.
A good child with a gun. Happy shooting, kids.
And as far as Walsh's response to this after, when asked on Twitter, kindergartens really, man? Joe responded, what can I say, Bradley? Sacha Baron Cohen got me. Do I believe kindergartners should be armed? Hell no, but it's on me. Sacha fooled me good. Flew me out to DC for some made-up Friend of Israel award. I gotta live with it. And also, separately, when explaining how he even ended up there, why he even said this, he said he was, quote, duped. And apparently they got him on the show because they offered him an award from some Israeli TV station because I'm a great supporter of Israel. Adding, after they conducted an interview, they had me read off of a teleprompter talking about some of the innovative products that Israel invented. Adding, then they had me read about this 4-year-old child in Israel who, when a terrorist entered his classroom, somehow he grabbed the terrorist's gun and held the terrorist at bay. And that was an example of how Israel trains and arms preschool kids on how to use firearms, and boy, shouldn't we do that in America. Walsh then saying that he thought, as he was reading it, well, this is kind of crazy, but it is Israel, and Israel is strong in defense, and that he only later found out this whole thing was made up. But here's the thing that's weird to me. It's not essentially like, oh, former Congressman Joe Walsh, he just got duped. Based off of his explanation, it appears that he was completely fine reading this because, oh, it was Israel. But if human life is human life, you can say, you know, I was reading a teleprompter all you want, but you decided to read that teleprompter at any point. You could have stopped. And by following through with it, you endorsed, whether it be an Israeli child or whoever, you endorsed giving children as young as 4 years old guns. I don't care where you are on the gun debate. I think we can all agree that giving a 4-year-old a gun is pure insanity. You actually said to a camera you knew was recording that would go out to someone.
A first grader can become a first grenade. Happy shooting, kids.
You ridiculous human beings. I know that I try to end each story with, you know, what do you think about this? And I'll do the same for this one, but is there any way in your mind that this is not a disgusting, ridiculous mess? Especially since he admitted this is real. Right? Unless you suffer from Ron Burgundy disease, where you're like, well, the prompter said it, so I had to say it. Whether you're reading a teleprompter or not, if you're saying it, you're co-signing that statement. But that said, of course, that is my personal takeaway and opinion, and no matter what yours is, I'd love to hear from you. And then let's talk about why we have Elon Musk and the Thailand cave rescue back in the news. I personally thought we were past this story, at least for a while. There, of course, was the successful rescue of all of these kids and their coach, and then there was the side story of Elon Musk criticism. And around that, we talked about the validity of, you know, people just dismissing Elon Musk's tweets because he was a billionaire or because he had a ton of followers, saying he shouldn't respond to things. And of course, I was of the personal mindset that because someone has a ton of followers or a ton of money, that they shouldn't have to send censor themselves.
And then all of this happened.
Yet a guy by the name of Vern Unsworth, he's a British diver who reportedly helped rescue the Thai soccer team from the cave last week. According to reports, he played an important role in the mission. He helped connect British experts to Thai authorities. And also, according to reports, he was a key member because of his knowledge of the cave system, which he spent 6 years navigating. And then, in a recent interview with CNN, Unsworth was asked what he thought about Elon Musk's miniature escape pod idea. And I'll include the segment, but the key points are here.
A sticky submarine where it hurts. Just had absolutely no chance of working. He had no conception of what the cave passage was like. The submarine, I believe, was about 5'6" long, rigid, so it wouldn't have gone round corners or round, you know, round any obstacles. It wouldn't have made the first 50 meters into the cave from the dive start point. Just a PR stunt.
But he went into the cave Tuesday.
And was asked to leave very quickly.
And after this, unsurprisingly, Unsworth's comments got in front of Elon Musk. He had a New York Times writer linking out to a New York Times article. It included excerpts from the piece titled, What Elon Musk Should Learn from the Thailand Cave Rescue, and was captioned, Heard about Elon Musk's rescue submarine? The cave diver who masterminded the Thai cave rescue called it a, quote, PR stunt. That was the politest thing he said. You might be wondering, well, he tried to help. Let me explain with this thread in this New York Times piece. And in the tweets that followed, the writer made a point to note, first, there is nothing wrong with wanting to help. That's great. Wonderful. I commend Elon Musk and every single person who says they'd like to help anyone anywhere. The problem isn't that at all, but there is a huge lesson here for all of Silicon Valley if they can listen. And the piece goes on, it's a long thread, I'll link to it down below, but Musk responds to the top tweet. Never saw this British expat guy who lives in Thailand at any point when we were in the caves. Also including a note that was sus, like suspect or shady. Adding only people in sight were the Thai Navy / Army guys who were great. Thai Navy SEALs escorted us in, total opposite of wanting us to leave. Water level was actually very low and still not flowing. You could literally have swum to Cave 5 with no gear, which is obvious how the kids got in. If not true, then I challenge this dude to show final rescue video. Huge credit to pump and generator team, unsung heroes here. And then adding, you know what? Don't bother showing the video. We will make one of the mini sub / pod going all the way to K5, no problemo. Sorry, pedo guy, you really did ask for it. And it's that final tweet and final note that made a ton of people lash out at Elon Musk. Because according to these reports, this guy was a key person in saving these young boys, and then Elon Musk just called him a pedophile. And unless there's some other information there, it appears that Elon Musk is just calling him a pedo because he is a white guy in Thailand. And this is a note that Kumail Nanjiani hit, saying he didn't just call the British rescuer in Thailand a pedophile. He called him a pedophile because he couldn't imagine another reason for a white guy to be in Thailand, which is a false assumption. Sometimes white guys visit Thailand to show off their useless submarines. In response to a tweet that said, oh, sorry, he's calling the guy who found the children a pedo, real classy Elon Musk, Musk replied, bet you a signed dollar it's true. And so the backlash continued, and then eventually Elon Musk ended up deleting those tweets. And now the big update today is that Unsworth is considering legal action against Musk.
Would you consider taking legal action against him?
Yes. It's not finished.
Now, aside from that potential lawsuit, there is also the side story of what about Tesla's stock price, right? One of the big constants has been Elon Musk does something publicly and then we look at Tesla's stock price. Now, you can't say that every fluctuation of Tesla's stock price is associated with Elon Musk and what he says publicly. But at the same time, it's not ridiculous to say that there is a connection sometimes. And today, when we look at the stock price, it's down 3%. Since June 18th, just slightly less than a month ago, is at 370. As of recording this video, it is at 308. Still, an important thing to note for the long term is that it's still much higher than one of their last major dumps. Back in March, of course, there were controversies there, the bonehead phone call, the stock price dropped to 252. So as far as the question, is Elon Musk bad for the long term of the company? I don't really think so. People have very limited memories, and it feels like in 2018, there are 10 to 20 completely focus shifting stories every week. But we'll see. The final note that I'll hit on, because some people were like, Phil, how do you feel about defending Elon Musk? And then all of a sudden he says this. Once again, to reiterate, just so there's no confusion, my point is that you should not automatically dismiss someone or handcuff someone because they have success. But if they're being a ridiculous, disgusting asshole throwing out baseless accusations, they should also not be shielded by their success. Unfortunately, as I feel like is probably going to be represented in most of the stories today, the people at the center of them, you're going to have people that are like, this is my guy, I defend my guy, or ooh, I hate that person always. But of course, like with every show, I'm not trying to speak to the people that are completely locked in. I'm trying to talk to that 20 to 40% in the gray, middle-ish range. And keep in mind, I say that noting that we all are locked in on certain topics. But we need to try to challenge ourselves to hear it from a different side now and then. But all of that said, I do want to pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts about this story? Maybe you're of the mindset that Elon Musk's response was completely fine, or no, do you think that he went too far? Do you feel like this is him lashing out due to the international pylon, and so then it's just being targeted now at this one person? Any and all thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. But from that, I want to share some stuff I love today, and today in Awesome, brought to you by BetterHelp.com/DeFranco. BetterHelp, if you don't know, is the fantastic place where you can get affordable private online counseling. You get access to licensed, trained, experienced, accredited psychologists, marriage and family therapists, clinical social workers, and board licensed professional counselors. And it's so simple. All you've got to do is go to BetterHelp.com/DeFranco, you fill out a questionnaire, you match with your counselor, and boom, you can start counseling today. And on a personal note, they are not just a sponsor, they are a service I personally use and recommend. And honestly, even if you are someone that's like, maybe I should talk to someone, I don't even care if you use my code. Obviously, there's a benefit there for me. Hell, even if you don't use this service, I think just having someone that you can talk to, it's so incredibly beneficial. And if we can take the stigma away from people feeling like it's a weird thing, for me, that's something I'd still consider a win. So whether you click the link in the description or you use someone else's, win-win. And the first bit of awesome is it is Amazon Prime Day. All the stuff that you might want and or think that maybe in the future you might use at some point. It might be on sale. And I personally love Amazon Prime Day because it is like the real life version of Steam Summer Sales, which is also the reason why I have like 100 games I've never played, but I was like, well, it's 70% off. I'll totally play that in the zero fucking free time I have. But one day, maybe I'll get to it. Then we had Life Noggin giving us Alien Hand Syndrome. You have the director of Skyscraper breaking down an action scene with Dwayne Johnson. Then we got another clip for Unfriended Dark Web. Then we had the game theorist talking about the real age of Ash Ketchum from Pokemon. We got a teaser for the new season of Doctor Who. We had Ian Kung, who's become one of my favorites, giving us how Papa John practices public relations. And if you want to see the full versions of everything I just shared, the secret link of the day, anything I talked about today, links as always are in the description down below. And then let's talk about President Trump and Vladimir Putin. They met today in Helsinki, they had a long conversation, and then we had a press conference, and just to kind of frame this for you. They went into this meeting following the wave of news from the United States, where a federal grand jury indicted 12 Russian military officers, who according to reports were working for the Russian Intelligence Directorate, for running an active cyber operation in 2016 to steal and disseminate information with the intent to interfere in the US election. Right, and so this is massive news from the Mueller probe. This is one of the first set of charges that directly accuse the Russian government. And in this almost 30-page indictment, it alleges that the Russians targeted state election boards, secretaries of state, and election software companies. In addition, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the Democratic National Committee, and Hillary Clinton's campaign. And also a potential thing of note with this indictment, the indictment explains that on the night of July 27th, 2016, Russian operatives targeted Clinton campaign emails for the first time. That just happens to be, and the indictment doesn't say that they are 100% connected, that just happens to be the same day Donald Trump said,
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
And of course, separately from this indictment, that specific moment has been pointed to, but also there have been defenders of the president saying that he was just joking here. The main point, Trump and Putin going into this meeting and then press conference following this indictment. And two of the main things that stuck out about this press conference were comments regarding Russia-Trump collusion, as well as Russian meddling. And the thing I want to note here is it is very important that we look at these as two different topics, because often people combine them to say that one proves the other or one dismisses the other. So with that said, on interference, you had Putin saying that the Russian state has never interfered and is not going to interfere into internal American affairs, including the election process. And then on the note of collusion, he calls it utter nonsense. He says, name a single fact, but this is of course in the face of intelligence agencies saying, yes, this was Russia. And then there was this incredibly notable moment from Donald Trump.
With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others, they said they think it's Russia. President Putin, he just said it's not Russia. I will say this, I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people. But I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Now, all of that is a standout statement for a variety of reasons. So the first thing, if you don't know, Dan Coats is Trump's Director of National Intelligence, a man who almost right before this summit happened said these actions are persistent, they're pervasive, and they are meant to undermine America's democracy on a daily basis, regardless of whether it's election time or not. Russia actors and others are exploring vulnerabilities in our critical infrastructure as well. The warning lights are blinking red again. Today, the digital infrastructure that serves this country is literally under attack. And so that's coming from Trump's Director of National Intelligence, not just the media that Trump has been labeling the enemy of the people, not the angry obstructionist Democrats, but his guy. And he's like, my intelligence guy tells me one thing, but then I talk to Vlad, and Vlad says no. And so I'm like, I don't know. And then in that same statement, he flips it. He talks about Hillary Clinton again. He casts doubt on our intelligence community. Also on the note of saying he doesn't understand why it would be Russia, Putin, during the course of this press conference, did admit that he did prefer Trump to win.
To win the election, and did you direct any of your officials to help him do that?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Because he talked about bringing the U.S.-Russia relationship back to normal.
Also, a final note here that needs to be unpacked. As far as Putin's offer where Mueller could go to Russia, ask questions, it gets kind of interesting because he throws Hillary Clinton in there. Putin saying through a translator. Then we would expect that the Americans would reciprocate and they would question officials, including the officers of law enforcement and intelligence services of the United States, who we believe have something to do with illegal actions on the territory of Russia, and we have to request the presence of our law enforcement. And as far as the context of that, he added, business associates of Mr. Browder have earned over $1.5 billion in Russia. They've never paid any taxes, neither in Russia or the United States, and yet the money escaped the country. They were transferred to the United States. They sent a huge amount of money, $400 million, as a contribution to the campaign of Hillary Clinton. Well, that's a personal case. It might have been legal, the contribution itself, but the way the money was earned was illegal. And following Putin's allegations here, you had some saying, oh, this was the big smoking gun, whereas you had many others saying, no, this is an obviously false allegation by Putin to just mislead. Browder, to put it lightly, is not one of Putin's favorite people. Additionally, as of right now, there is no evidence whatsoever that $400 million was donated to Hillary Clinton's campaign in this manner or the Clinton Foundation. Also regarding this topic, you had Kenneth Vogel tweet, we tried to fact check Putin's claim that Bill Browder's associates donated $400 million in untaxed Russian money to Hillary Clinton's campaign, but it was so completely without evidence that there were no pants to light on fire, so I hereby deem it without pants. Browder also hit back at Vladimir Putin in a phone call, saying it's a true affirmation of the fact that we found Putin's Achilles heel with the Magnitsky Act. He's basically lost it emotionally because his own money in the West is now being seized under that Magnitsky Act. And if you're not familiar, Browder actually championed that act, which resulted in US sanctions against Russia. But there's also the issue of how could this even work, because Browder actually isn't even reportedly a US citizen anymore. And so like I said, this is kind of the main branching off of the two main things that stood out to me. For you, I'll link to the entire press conference down below so you can watch through it. The main point here, following the press conference, there was a bipartisan negative reaction to Trump. And before we jump into politicians, we'll start with Neil Cavuto of Fox Business.
This was the time and the place for the president to look Putin squarely in the eye and said, you will be punished for what you did in 2016 and don't ever think about doing that again.
But he didn't. And that's what made it disgusting. That's what made his performance disgusting. I'm sorry, this is the only way I feel. It's not a right or left thing to me, it's just wrong. A U.S. president on foreign soil talking to our biggest enemy or adversary or competitor, I don't know how we define them these days, is essentially letting the guy get away with this and not even, you know, offering a mild criticism.
Additionally, a Republican Ben Sasse saying, this is bizarre and flat out wrong. The United States is not to blame. America wants a good relationship with the Russian people, but Vladimir Putin and his thugs are responsible for Soviet-style aggression. When the president plays these moral equivalence games, he gives Putin a propaganda win he desperately needs. Republican Pete King saying, I strongly disagree with Trump's statement that Russia did not interfere in the 2016 election. I'm disappointed, not flabbergasted. Then adding, having Russia cooperate with Special Counsel Robert Mueller would be like bringing ISIS into a joint terrorism task force. You also had Republican and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan say, there is no question that Russia interfered in our election and continues attempts to undermine democracy here and around the world. That is not just the finding of the American intelligence community, but also the House Committee on Intelligence. The president must appreciate that Russia is not our ally. There is no moral equivalence between the United States and Russia, which remains hostile to our most basic values and ideals. The United States must be focused on holding Russia accountable and putting an end to its vile attacks on democracy. You also had Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence that Trump mentioned, that we talked about his words before. before the summit. He issued a statement saying, "We have been clear in our assessments of Russian meddling in the 2016 election and their ongoing pervasive efforts to undermine our democracy, and we will continue to provide unvarnished and objective intelligence in support of our national security." One of the final responses we'll hit on is former CIA Director John Brennan, who tweeted, "Donald Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, but he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Republican patriots, where are you?" But all of that said, where I want to end this story is my personal takeaway from it. And once again, I will hit on this note that it is important to understand that the idea of Russian collusion with President Trump and his administration is a different one than just Russian meddling. One of the most troubling and potentially damning things is Donald Trump is fighting so heavily against this idea of collusion, that Russia ended up handing him this election, that he is then throwing the baby out with the bathwater regarding Russian meddling. So much so that he is dismissing our intelligence community, so much so that he's dismissing his own guy, Dan Coats. And he just says, you know, Vlad said he didn't do it. I think, you know, why? There's no reason he would, despite in this same press conference him saying that he would have preferred for me to win, and our president threw our intelligence communities under the bus in favor of Putin. And in my mind, there's really only two explanations for it. One, there was collusion, so you have to deny any Russian involvement. Or two, Donald Trump's ego is so massive that he does not want to admit that anyone else helped him win. That if he admits all these things his intelligence communities have said is true, that that will make him an illegitimate president. And so he is putting his ego first before country. And as far as these statements from people like Paul Ryan, who was word fucked into submission by Donald Trump over the past 3 years, they are essentially meaningless if they are not followed by action. And based off of the actions of people like Paul Ryan, it doesn't appear like they actually have that big of an issue. They give the soundbite, they give the statement, and then what? They still play the position. But that's where we are right now, and I feel like I'm still trying to digest the full situation, because ultimately what I saw was a US president kind of just nodding in approval while Vladimir Putin spouted lies and bullshit. And not only did he nod, he then endorsed those statements. That said, I do want to pass the question off to you. What is your takeaway from this? Any and all opinions, whether you have the same feelings as me or you disagree, I don't care if you're one of the people that probably are coming to this video to mass dislike it because someone said something negative about Trump. Any and all, what are you thinking and why? I want to talk about this. And that's where we're going to end today's show. And of course, this is the PDS. It is not just a show. It is a conversation. So if you have opinions on the last story, the first one, anything in between, let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. Also, remember, if you like this video, hit that like button. If you hated it, still hit that like button. The sarcastic likes, those are the ones that hurt me the most. Also, if you're new here, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss these daily weekday videos. But that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.